Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa Dunn, and thanks for joining me here today on The Communication Architect. Each week, we'll share content that will empower you to grow your personal leadership capacity through the development of communication competencies that build emotional health and relational resilience. We'll unpack some practical applications of interpersonal, intrapersonal, family, and organizational communication. And we'll connect with stories of transformation that will inspire you to achieve personal and social change. Now, let's build the scaffolding you need to become a communication architect. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Lisa Dunn, a lifelong homeschooling parent, author, and president of Chula Vista Christian University, a four-year university that centers on mentor-driven, Bible-based, debt-free higher education. You can visit us at cvcu.us to see how we're taking back education for the next generation. If you're new to the show, we're in a season unpacking American education, so be sure to scroll back on my podcast for tips on breaking free from the toxic traits of traditional schooling. Pastors, if you'd like to know more about how you can play a vital role in rescuing the outsourced generation, go to cvcu.us and click the Start an Academy tab. We can have your campus up and running in 4 weeks anywhere in the United States. And parents, we'd love for you to join us on ground or online for homeschool support programs or our college programs, political science, engineering, pre-medicine, psychology, education, business, and more. Get all the details at cvcu.us. Well, I'm so excited about today's show. You know, we love unpacking great books. We love reading. And I'm super excited about our guest today. Ebi is the amazing mom of three boys. And when we were praying before the show, I was just remembering all these moments where I've seen her just patiently leaning down with her boys and correcting, admonishing, nurturing, and just such a beautiful picture of the patience that the Lord has with us. So I just want to honor her today. I'm so excited. I think we met in 2020, maybe a little earlier, but she was jumping wholeheartedly into her first homeschool journey. And she now runs our K to sixth grade homeschool academy at Chula Vista Christian University. And I'm just always so impressed with her patience, her spirit of excellence, her very clear love for her children. It's such a beautiful thing to watch. She also holds a master's degree in special education. And we're super excited to be having her in the college classroom next semester. But Ebi, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us. And tell us a little bit more about your homeschool journey, how you got started.
Thank you. Yes. So our family had always been planning on homeschooling in junior high. I was homeschooled myself in junior high and absolutely loved that experience. I thought it was really formative. And so we sent our oldest to public kindergarten in 2019. And as we know, the world shut down. And God really used that to accelerate our timeline to bring our family home into the homeschooling realm. And my background, as Dr. Lisa said, I have a master's degree. It's actually just in education, not special education, but I went into special education after college, working with children on the autism spectrum in their home doing behavior therapy. And then my middle son has some extra learning needs that we've been working with him since he was 7 months old. So I feel like experience has really given me a degree in what it's like to uniquely help and curate education for a child who does not fit the norm. So that's my background and how I kind of landed on this homeschooling journey. And I am full in. I absolutely love it. And I was actually asked just yesterday by a friend who has her kids in public school, so are you planning on doing this like the whole way through? And I said, that's the plan. Obviously, we can make our plans and I don't know exactly what the future holds, but that's our plan and that's what we feel called to do. So yeah, that's my story.
So powerful. And I know a lot of moms just really lean into your wisdom and experience on special education because there's just such tremendous fruit in the one-to-one model. And parents forget that they are the answer. They're the solution. And parents and pastors working together are the solution to America's education crisis, hands down. So I'm just so excited that you're on our team. Well, today we're looking at a book that I think you're one of the ones who first told me about this book. And it's a book that's bundled with the kind of a formative philosophy book that's bundled with the My Father's World package, which I know our readers are familiar with from the show. But the book is called For the Children's Sake. And I know it resonated with you really powerfully. It kind of came alongside you early on in your journey. What were some of the things that really stood out? And we're going to unpack some of these tremendous quotes on the show today, but just kind of as an overview, what were some of the things that really stood out to you or or caught your attention?
Yes. So I was first introduced to the book by a podcast called The New Mason Jar by Cindy Rollins. And just hearing her gave me so much encouragement as a new homeschooler. And she talked about this book at least every other podcast. So I kind of through osmosis, not actually reading it myself, really began to believe like this book can change people's entire perspective on children, on education, on how we approach even just sitting down and listening to a child tell us something. So I had this kind of framework that this book would be a good thing to read.
Yes.
But I didn't read it for a bit. And then finally, when I sat down and I had purchased it off of ThriftBook and it sat in my shelf for a little bit and I had some time, I remember opening it up when I was sick because I had some time to read. I was resting and just, I was crying every other page. Like this resonated so much with me. It's based off of kind of the philosophy of Charlotte Mason, which we'll get into a little bit more. But I'd always resonated with that educational philosophy. And then just to pair it with Susan's personal experiences, it reached me. And I think that it can reach parents in any stage of life, whether they don't have kids and they're planning on starting a family, they have young children, they have middle-aged children, or even grandchildren. So it's really a far-reaching book that isn't just for a specific group of moms or even families. I think dads too could really benefit from reading it.
Yeah, so powerful. And it's really this kind of unlocking philosophy type of book. It reminds me so much of the work of one of my favorite authors, Neil Postman, and just this philosophy of education is so backwards and so broken and so it's been made so complicated when it's really so simple, you know, and being able to step outside of that fray and see clearly. You know, I was on a run this morning and watching all the little tiny children lining up for the school bus and thinking, moms, dads, it doesn't have to be this way. This big yellow prison bus is a symbol of our modern culture that is so the brokenness and that we've just kind of succumbed to. This is the way it is, the status quo. And so I love these books like For the Children's Sake that really break us out. And people have wondered, why are Charlotte Mason's writings not so popular? I know Susan asks in the book, since Charlotte Mason's death in 1923, you would expect a surge in popularity. But I think Susan's explanation of that is so true. She said Mason was one of the great educationists and somebody who changed the whole idea of what education is and how it functions, which again, I would say the same of Neil Postman. And because life has changed so much and values have changed so much, she said that, quote, our generation can't grasp the key, which explains exactly what human life is. And so we're grasping for all of these elements of meaning. And so a philosophy book like you, when you heard it on the podcast, it resonated with you because you know something is wrong. Yes. And I know parents, I'm watching all these parents standing in line at the bus stop. They know something is wrong. There's this deadened sense of hopelessness. And parents, if you're listening in and you're thinking, gosh, I don't know if I have what it takes, you have what it takes. You are the secret ingredient to your child's success, socioeconomic success across the board. One of the quotes that I love from Susan McCauley is the Christians. She said, Christians can't develop a Christian view of education by accepting the usual aims and views of our society and then adding a Christian message or interpretation. And this is what I see so often in the K-12 culture, in the college culture, that we just get in this very drone-like groupthink oriented idea of this is how it always was, this is how it always will be. And it was not always that way, first of all. And second of all, it will not always be this way. If we want to see sweeping change in our culture, it has to begin with education. What are some of the quotes that, or maybe one quote that really stood out? I know we're going to unpack a whole lot of them, but what are some that really stood out to you?
So this one, I really think nods to that about a Christian view of education. And I think it really starts with seeing children. And this is from obviously The Children's Sake, but she says, can we serve God's lambs wholeheartedly while we are being consumed with career demands? When there is no parent who makes it his business to understand the individual child and the people whose job it is to care for him, treat him as part of their career, daycare centers and schools, perhaps the only place where that child will find understanding is in the counselor's office for 1 hour a week. Mm-hmm. And that quote really resonated with me because we have, like you said, outsourced. Mm-hmm. We've outsourced the care and keeping of our children's souls, their spirits, their minds, their hearts. And if nobody is truly caring for them, we see the fruit of that. Yeah. And so just that was convicting because I don't work outside of the home, but I have things that pull on my time and that pull on my, demands of housework and play dates and cleaning and shopping. Right. And I get so focused on the things that I feel like are necessary to keep our house running instead of just sitting and really talking with our children and being consumed with what their hearts need. And that convicted me a lot. And I know it can convict people in every walk of life and whatever they're going through right now.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It reminds me of one of my friends wrote in a book that, you know, we pray and pray for these babies and we have these miracle babies. And then our relationship with them is a picture on our desk at work while they're in the care of someone else. It's like, that's not God's best. And we've talked on the show before about the jurisdiction that God has given the schools, which is none, zero. The jurisdiction he's given the government to raise our kids, zero. Yeah. And that all of these paradigms are so broken. I know a lot of parents think, well, the teacher is a Christian, and so my kid is in a safe environment. But again, yoked to a woke government system that's pagan ideology. I mean, now, of course, we're seeing all of that. But even at the college level, you know, Ken Ham's written tremendous books on Already Compromised, Already Gone, on, you know, how frozen the hearts are of the next generation because they've been sitting in these environments where there's a falsification, you know, colleges, you know, there are all these colleges that say Christian college, but they hire atheist professors. And Luke 6:40, the student will become like the teacher, you know? Yep. So there's a lot of, I think, this falsification. And of course, parents don't feel capable, which is the first greatest lie that parents deal with. I love this, this quote she says on page 22, there are reasons, many reasons why kids no longer play with joy, initiative, and creativity. And she chalks it up to their personality is so wounded. Their personality couldn't even function on crutches. It's so wounded. It's so, they've lost the sense of who they are. There's another little section here where Susan talks about the proper diet that as parents, we know what our kids should of course, when this book was written, it was more, the diet was a lot better. American diet's now the standard American diet, sad. But she said children are often well-fed physically, but spiritually and mentally starved. And she says this leaves them driven to strange and unnatural behavior. And I think about even in the world of women today, we see a 25% increase in interpersonal violence among women, which has historically not been a trait that we've seen at all in females. And females are wired to be more nurturing, more caring. Yeah. Talk to me about my dissertation if you're a listener and you didn't know those stats. But it's so there are strange and unnatural behaviors that are coming out of our children because they're mentally and spiritually starved. I think it's such a powerful visual. She said, what a violence it would be to the child to conscientiously apply the habit and discipline of education and then sit them down routinely to meals of sawdust. That is not abundant life. It's not the abundant living that Jesus calls us to. So powerful.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think that when we think about education and we think about what we're giving our children, I know that this book is a huge paradigm shift for parents going from the multiple choice, you know, fill in the blank, how to measure, you know, standardized learning to education is a life and it's a lifestyle. And that when children learn to read and they have become ignited with the passion of learning, that's when true learning happens. And I was really meditating on that because my husband and I have come from different backgrounds. I was an avid reader when I was younger, and then I lost that in college and high school and college with the demands of academic rigor. Right. I was so consumed with trying to get straight A's, and I did, but I didn't read and I didn't enjoy and pursue my own passions, and I lost that for so long. My husband only did the bare minimum, never really read for pleasure, would read the like abridged children's version in high school to be able to write the book report so that he could pass. And now he can't put books down. So his education, his self-education really began when he was older. And I think the beauty of this perspective that Susan gives in The Children's Sake is that if we can ignite this flame of a deep hunger for learning and quest for knowledge when they're young, we can feed them ideas. We can feed them deep spiritual questions. We can feed them curiosity. Mm-hmm. That will be planted in their hearts, and that will be lifelong. And their rich value for learning will be something that carries them into every endeavor that they pursue.
It's so powerful. And it really is that method. It's about asking questions, getting them to think deeply. When you were sharing that, I was picturing that poem, The Learned Astronomer, you know, the students sitting in the classroom looking at all the numbers and figures and grows so bored, just walks out and looks at the stars. Like it's the learning. And I think there's so much pressure on American parents. We've talked about Jean Piaget's work before, the American question. There's always been this pressure, push, 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 perform, perform, perform. And yes, we want to be excellent in everything we do. We also want to live that deep thinking, abundant life that is not yoked to, you know, groupthink, which is what we're seeing all around us right now. And so to be able to have that freedom, the flexibility, that's scary to a lot of new parents who are, you know, they would ask, oh, what do I do? What do I do? Oh my gosh, my book's not here. What do I do? You know, there's just this lack of trust in the natural progression of children. We've talked before on the show about how powerful a child's mind is, and Piaget and Erickson both unpack this beautifully. But I think one really great example is a concept called over-regularization of verbs. And I remember when Simone was little, my youngest, we would hear her, repeating things back to us and making statements. And she would say things like, I catched the ball, C-A-T-C-H-E-D, E-D on the end of the verb. Now, her dad and I never said catched. We obviously know verb regularization. however, because the child's brain is so powerful and so inquisitive, what the child does is listens to patterns of speech and figures that because ED normally is the ending of a past tense verb, catch must end in ED. So irregular verbs are outside of that pattern. I never taught her that. Her dad never taught her that. It's the children's brains are so powerful that they are built to learn. And so I think reminders like that of grammar, how children take in knowledge, how they're curious learners. And what you said about your college experience is so telling and so powerful, because here you are in the midst of this sea of knowledge and you stopped reading, you stopped being curious. And that, I think, parents, it's such a powerful reminder for us. We've talked before about the two keys of intrinsic motivation, efficacy and wonder. We've got to create this environment of wonder for our children. And that is, we don't have to know all the answers. We shouldn't be feeding them all the answers. We should be asking them questions that will lead them to the answers. Susan said, education is a life. That life is sustained on ideas. Ideas are of spiritual origin, and God has made us so that we get to them chiefly as we convey them to one another, whether that's by word of mouth or in page scripture, musical symphony. But we must sustain a child's inner life with ideas, as we sustain his body with food. And traditional education in your life, in my life, in the life of many other people has done the opposite. It has starved us. It has made us not. I have so many students when I taught in traditional college who said at five, they loved reading, but somewhere along the way that love of reading, that love of knowledge, that pursuit and curiosity, that fell away. They lost touch with that. I imagine how Piaget would respond today if he saw the push for, you know, four-year-olds in calculus and just the crazy drive that we see around us. I know Neil Postman, the king of dangerous nonsense, he would be really disappointed. And I think the exciting thing for us is obviously we're working to be part of the solution. And I know you've seen that in your own children. Share a little bit about kind of why you see the method of inquiry-based learning effective for you. You do such a phenomenal job with it.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So inquiry-based, I really have taken a nod from my husband. We call him like the question man because he is so good at when a question comes, he sees like all possible angles that question is coming from within that person's brain. And he's able to answer or ask another question in response that gives so much more depth and breadth and understanding to where that question is coming from. And so I really have learned from him how to ask questions and how to listen to questions from my children. But one such example, which I think is just so easy for parents to do is my children, we go outside a lot. We live in an apartment complex, and so we have to be outside. We don't have space inside. Yeah. And we have a child who we play with frequently, and he goes to public school, but his sense of wonder has not been lost yet. Miracle of miracles. And he is the one that is initiating and helping my children learn how to play, pretend Amazing. Play, because my kids generally like to build things instead of imagine things. And so when we're outside, he saw this caterpillar, and they were crawling all over this specific bush. And so that created all of these questions that the kids had. Well, why are they on this bush? So we talked about all the different things related to what types of food caterpillars eat. And then 3 weeks later, we saw tons of chrysalises everywhere. And we started doing this research that was completely child-driven. I had no interest in looking up what type of caterpillar this was, but I was excited with them, and I engaged with them in figuring out and discovering the answers. And we still don't know what those caterpillars and chrysalises turn into, what type of moth they look like, because we never saw them. But they keep on looking for them everywhere. They're like, oh, do you think that's the type of moth turned into that the caterpillar turned into? So creating that sense of wonder in just simple everyday life. And I know that Susan talks a lot about outside time and being outdoors and children needing to be outdoors for hours, being able to make noise and mess and have access to raw materials to play. And so I think that that is where the inquiry starts. I think nature is a great place to start that. And then reading scripture, that creates so many questions. And we've had so many deep questions from even my five-year-old. He asked a question, Mom, if Jesus was Mary's son, and he also was there at the beginning when the world was created, so then he had a hand in creating Mary, how does that work? And I was like, oh my gosh, able to also say, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. Or I don't know. And having the humility as a parent, you don't have to have all the answers.
That's right.
Modeling that, I think, is really key. So that's how I've seen inquiry-based education in our home.
So powerful. So powerful. Thank you so much, EB, for being on the show. We all know that our nation's educational ecosystem must be radically changed for the sake of the next generation. And our local answer to that global crisis in education is Chula Vista Christian University. And with our inquiry-based model, we are founding dozens of academies across the United States and literally watching the culture shift. So I'm calling on churches across the United States to be part of the solution. You can go to drlisadunn.com and click the Start and Academy tab to step into that rescue mission today. And parents and grandparents, if you're considering your scholastic options for the coming year, there are so many choices available to you once you step off that big yellow prison bus. Be sure to learn more at cvcu.us, and don't forget to check out my latest book, Outsourced: Why America's Kids Need an Education Revolution. Again, I'm Dr. Lisa Dunn. Thanks for joining me on today's show, and we'll be back next week with more of our toxic trait analysis and what you can do to break free from the system. We'll see you then. Thanks again for joining us here on The Communication Architect. If you have questions about today's episode, or if there are topics you'd like to see us address, send your comments via Instagram to @DrLisaDunn or via email to contact@drlisadunn.com. That's DrLisaDunne.com. And remember, strategic communication will help you build greater emotional health and relational resilience. So don't miss the next episode. I'm Dr. Lisa Dunn, and I look forward to talking with you next time right here on The Communication Architect.